The next instruction has the rather pretentious title, The Copernican Revolution. I can describe its meaning and importance very simply like this. Quote, "The Copernican Revolution has taken place when the preacher has grasped the distinction between man-centered and God-centered proclamation, and then applied it to his own ministry." Question one, what is the root cause of man-centered preaching? Answer, man-centered preaching arises from man-centered religion / theology, even if entitled Christianity. This, in effect, is when we worship a God made in our own image. Karl Barth defined religion as human piety, human self-justification, and human conjecture. This, in direct contrast to the Christian revelation contained in Holy Scripture and designed for our salvation. Question two. Can you suggest some signs of the gulf between human religion and divine revelation? Answer, two must suffice. Although such signs occur in every book of the Bible, I nearly said on every page. One, the strange notion of man's search for God, which I seem to recall C.S. Lewis describing as the mouse searching for the cat. This favorite and most flattering concept is regularly aired, but is not supported by the Bible. The shocking reality is set out in Romans 1, where it is taught that God's holy indignation is due because man in his godlessness and wickedness actually suppresses the truth about his creator. I consulted my thesaurus on the word suppress. It is to conceal the truth, to silence it, to muzzle it, to stamp it out. An observation confirms that this happens all over the world, and particularly when man becomes a quasi-god like the appalling Mao, but also, of course, in much more respectable circles. In John's Gospel, we read these distressing words, and we know them to be true. John 3:19. Quote, "This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, that is truth. But men love darkness, that is error, rather than light, because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light, that is the truth about God." Note the dreadful verb hate. By nature, we hate the truth that condemns us. And has not God provided in the Bible vivid stories that a child may well understand, such as in Genesis 3, where sinful man flees before God? It's not God who's in hiding. It's not God who cannot be found. Similarly, in the Lord's parable of the lost sheep, it's scarcely a profitable exercise to reverse the action. A caring sheep, prepared for the long search, in order to find a straying shepherd and bring the lost one home. A second somewhat similar illustration of a man-centered theology leading to man-centered proclamation came home to me at theological college. It was a time, mid-20th century, when a liberal and rationalistic theology was still in many places in its pride and pomp. It seemed to me even then that the first four words of Genesis 1, that is the first four words of the entire scriptural revelation, had in much contemporary theological thinking undergone a radical, if unconscious, revision. It was no longer in the beginning God, but rather in the beginning man. Therefore, in the beginning man sought to work out the meaning of his existence. In the beginning, man evolved a philosophy that would satisfy his dreams and desires for autonomy. Thus, scripture was radically reordered to model an evolutionary progression with man as the measure of all things. And now, 50 years on, man in his disobedience is radically reordering the great primordial gifts of marriage and family, believing this greatly to improve on the Maker's orders for his creatures leading, we are told, to a welcome advance in human understanding and happiness. The fool hath said. Final question. Is it possible to provide a test by which we may recognize in ourselves a retrogression, a slipping back into this man-centered thinking and preaching? Answer. For myself, the best shock treatment for such backsliding is Galatians 1:10, a truly uncomfortable word to be taken seriously at regular intervals. Quote, am I now trying to win the approval of men or of God, asked the apostle? Or am I trying to please men? If I were still trying to please men, wait for it, I would not be a servant of Christ. Three times Paul hammers it home, for he knows that by nature we're all man pleasers. It's all but instinctive for us. Who does not seek approval to be liked, to satisfy the inquirer? Who wishes to wound unnecessarily? Who at times would not do much to soften the demands of Christ rather than drive away a near believer? Who does not shrink from man's disdain, from the disappointment maybe of friends, even of family? And yet the barrier stands. If I were trying to please men, to be accepted, to gain a reputation, to win favor, to be a good fellow, I would not be a servant of Christ, his minister. The seriousness of the matter emerges in the immediate context of Galatians 1:6. Paul is astonished that pleasing men has led even responsible leaders to turn to a different gospel, which is, dread words, to desert the Lord himself. 1 verse 8, Paul warns that if seeking others' good opinions leads us to preach a gospel other than that which he himself taught, see Ephesians 3, 2-6, we deserve to be eternally condemned, nothing less. You really cannot speak more robustly than that. A fateful issue then is a fateful issue now. Speaking for myself, I'm grateful for such plain language. Many have witnessed the power of the pew to control the pulpit, the power of political correctness to shut mouths, the power of ambition to curb faithful ministry, the power of social approval to seduce, the power of hostility to silence, the power of disgrace and disdain to shame us. The only cure is this, and we all know it, to win above all the approval of God. Yet even the great apostle himself needed the support and prayers of others to stay on that course, a course that had already cost him dear. Ephesians 6:19 and 20 always moves me. Pray also for me, writes Paul, that whenever I open my mouth, words may be given me, so that I will fearlessly make known the mystery of the gospel, for which I am in chains. Pray that I may declare it fearlessly as I ought.